Call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's May 9th, 2007, 20 minutes after 9 a.m. We're starting a little late today, and I apologize for that. We're running late hours, and we've got several bills on the table that we're trying to tweak. With me today is my co-chair, Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson, Senator Huggins, Senator Dyson, Senator Thomas, Senator Elton. We're going to discuss three bills this morning. House Bill 109, Disclosure of Ethics, Bribery, and Retirement. We're going to go to House Bill 133, Electronic Monitoring of Gang Probationers. And House Bill 229, Kenai Gasification Project Railroad Bonds. We will not be hearing SB 104, AGIA, this morning. We are trying to get that up late this afternoon, if possible. We will be updating the schedule later this morning. But with that, we're going to go to HB 109, short title, Ethics. We heard this bill yesterday afternoon, and we had a few amendments. And we had a few amendments that members wanted to explore some more, so we're going to continue addressing amendments. I would like to ask Mr. David Jones from the Department of Law to come forward. And with that, I would like to move a conceptual amendment first, just to start us off. That's on page 6, line 24. Page 6, line 24. The original bill from Judiciary had a meal cost that would have to be reported in a log of the lobbyist of $10. Or less would not have to be logged. We changed that to $50, and I'd like to go ahead and put an amendment on the table that we change that $50 down to $30. I'll go ahead and move that amendment. And I'll object for conversation or discussion. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The way I read this is that the amount doesn't have anything to do about whether or not a lobbyist can take you out to dinner or your family or anything of that nature. So it doesn't have any impact one way or the other. This is about bookkeeping and reporting, which appears to me to be an administrative burden in my estimation. But help me out if that's incorrect.
I think that is correct. It's at a it would require the lobbyist to log it in and report it to APOC. But in further discussions with some of the attorneys we have running around in the building, the lobbyists submit copies of their expenses to their clients for reimbursement. So this would be just one additional log that they would have to complete, so I guess what we're trying to find is that ground where it's not overly burdensome, but the public has full and adequate disclosure to know who is lobbying who, and particularly outside this building and at lunch and in the evenings. Is there any other comment on the... With that, I'll go ahead and remove my objection to the amendment. Any further objection to the amendment from 50 down to 30? Seeing none, that amendment is adopted. We'll now move on to the more formally written amendments. Amendment number one, Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number one, and I'll object for a discussion. And this is a conceptual amendment because as written, it was written to a previous version. But it, as we discussed yesterday, inserts a new section one, and it has to do with a new crime of failure to report bribery or receiving a bribe. And it was brought to me by a member of the other body from Senator Huggins' jurisdiction, I believe, and has our chair of judiciary is pretty enthusiastic about us including it. Yesterday at this table, rightly the question came up of what is a definition of a public servant. And I got Tam Cook, who's wrote this amendment, to give us the definition, and I hope it's on your tables. And it answers the questions that you rightly brought up here, and I was unable to answer.
We have that, Senator Dyson.
Yeah, good, good. So I have nothing to add to what I said yesterday. We have struggled in our culture to take that which were common assumptions, that good guys would turn into bad guys, you know, and that's certainly a part of common law. And as we've moved towards statute law and those kind of assumptions disappearing, there's been a movement a bit around the country and in this body to add some responsibilities for the good people to turn into bad people, and this is one of them. And I think it's a good idea, and I'm glad to carry it for others who thought about it.
Could Senator Dyson, could you please address your amendment? I think yesterday you pointed out some areas that needed to be lined out or separated out on the written amendment because of the change in the bill in front of us to when you wrote the amendment. Could you please go over that?
Yeah, I think everything after line 13, so from line 14 on, I think it disappears except on page 2, the section on applicability between line 7 and 10 needs to stay, and everything else comes out. And I think when I say it's a conceptual amendment, that gives the drafters a freedom to renumber as necessary.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
And then the question that I asked, so John Doe public can still be aware of a bribe and not have to report it, and it will not be a crime for him not to do so. And that is your intent.
That is correct, and that is the intention of this amendment, is to not include the general public.
Senator Elton.
Thank you, and I want to thank the sponsor of the amendment for the definition. It was very helpful, and I certainly don't have any problem with the definition of public servant. A question maybe for Mr. Jones. If you look at the amendment, on line 7, it says, witness is what the public servant knows or reasonably should know is. My wife often accuses me of being too literal and not nuanced enough as I see or observe or listen to things. And she will often tell me, I can't believe you didn't understand what that person meant. How would the courts look at the terminology or the phraseology, or reasonably should know?
Through the chair, Senator Elton. It would involve a combined standard. First of all, because this is a criminal statute, the beyond a reasonable doubt standard of proof would apply. Second, the second layer, the second standard, would be a more objective standard, reasonably should know. And I think when you combine the two, it will be only in those instances in which the circumstances are fairly obvious that what's going on is a bribe, that someone would be convicted under this statute.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Dyson.
And I appreciate the question, and I really wrestled with that when we put forward the misprison of a child bill, where you have a duty to report a child that's being raped, kidnapped, or assaulted, you know, or murdered. And in this town, I came out of one of the supermarkets and saw a child just panic, screaming in a male's arms, screaming, "Mommy, Mommy." And I thought, am I witnessing a kidnapping? You know, I faced that. And if it had turned out to be, I would have thought, you know, a reasonable person ought to have known that was a kidnapping in process. Turned out it wasn't, but those are honest consternation. And I think that the body of law says, you know, unless it was really clear, you're off the hook, you know, but you do have a duty.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I certainly don't have any problem with with what's intended here, but my concern is that I'm looking at the definition of public servant and wondering what in section B of this page, and I know it's used repeatedly throughout the bill, the section B of the definition that we have, the single page, it says, in this subparagraph, person includes an employee of the person. And I'm wondering just what that means. Because it references consultants, advisors, all kinds of other people that I never really considered were public servants. I thought a public servant was somebody that worked for in a public entity in some respect, but this appears to be getting outside of that. Or am I mistaken? Because now we're talking about consultants that may be hired, I understand that. But that last phraseology, I'm not sure what that means. Person includes an employee of the person.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, I believe that the intent there is that because person in the legal definition includes corporations and other non-human entities, that would reach the employees of, for example, a corporation that is under contract with the state. So that the fact that the entity that's contracting with the state wouldn't relieve those folks that are actually doing the work for the state under contract from their obligations under this provision. They would be considered public servants for that purpose.
But we're not talking about just a private citizen in this case, then.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, of course, those folks would be private citizens, but also as contractors of the state, right, they would come within this definition.
But they have to be being compensated in some respect by a public entity, is my understanding.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, that's my understanding also, that they would have to be under contract with the state to provide those services.
Thank you.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, and I appreciate this line of thought, and I think that this definition was crafted to include all the folks we can think about who could have an opportunity to influence the public process, and that's why I appreciate it. But notice that some of the boards and commissions that are in subparagraph C may not be compensated, but they are different from the group who are compensated in paragraph B.
Thank you. Any other questions on the amendment? Amendment number one. Is the objection still held, Senator Dyson?
Negative. I withdraw my objection.
The objection's been withdrawn. Any further objection to adopting amendment number one? Seeing no objection, amendment number one is adopted. We'll go on to amendment number five. And I'll go ahead and move amendment number five and object for discussion. Amendment number five, we went over last night, and what it does is it would exclude from being a paid lobbyist convicted felons of moral turpitude. And moral turpitude is theft, forgery, criminal possession of forgery devices, bribery, commercial bribery, receiving a bribe, perjury by inconsistent statements. Some rather heavy stuff. It's not misdemeanors or the like. And I personally feel that, in particularly in this room and in the adjacent room on the other side of the building, in the other body, and in the legislature in general, when we deal with hundreds of millions and billions of dollars and allocating amongst communities, and we allocate money that funds for projects that move the direction of the state, that have the effect that ripples through decades, that we need to have pretty tight requirements on who is allowed to be a lobbyist and lobby the individual elected officials to try to persuade them in particular directions. And I feel that being a convicted felon, and particularly with moral turpitude, you should not be allowed to be a paid lobbyist, much like you're not allowed to have security licenses and insurance licenses and a whole litany of avenues that are closed if you cross that line as a convicted felon. That's why I bring this amendment to the table today. Senator Thomas.
You could theoretically, I guess, or am I mistaken, we did have the discussion yesterday about whether you could run for and serve office. So could you be in the legislature and be a convicted felon? You could not lobby.
Maybe we'll ask Ms. Carpinetti to come forward, please. No. I don't know which one of the two attorneys at the end of the table want to volunteer to answer the question, but I figured between the two of you, we'll get an answer out of one of you.
One with the criminal experience, yes.
Yep. Actually, I'll defer to my colleague.
Okay, that's fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Thomas. As I understand it, the qualification for one of the qualifications for serving in the legislature is that you be a registered voter. Yesterday, there was some discussion about whether a convicted felon would be barred from registering to vote. So I did some research on that. Good. Alaska Statute 15.05.030, which is entitled Loss and Restoration of Voting Rights, provides that a person convicted of a crime that constitutes a felony involving moral turpitude under state or federal law may not vote in a state, federal, or municipal election from the date of the conviction through the date of the unconditional discharge of the person. Upon the unconditional discharge, the person may register under Alaska Statute 15.07, which of course invites the question, what does unconditional discharge mean? And I also did research on that. Alaska Statute Section 15.60.010 provides in subsection B39, unconditional discharge means that a person is released from all disability arising under a conviction and sentence, including probation and parole.
So I'm assuming if that takes place, then the person could, and that's fairly normal procedures, and not after a period of time anyhow that takes place, I would assume.
Senator Thomas, through the chair, personally not familiar with the process, unfortunately.
I'm glad of that.
However, that's my understanding.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is that federal law, or is that law that the state of Alaska can change? That, say that we determine, such as we are doing with the lobbyists, determine that people can't serve or run for public office if they are a convicted felon.
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, I'm not certain whether it's a constitutional provision that establishes the qualifications for the legislature. I suspect it is, but I'm not certain of that. And if that were true, then it would require a constitutional amendment.
May I just make an addition? My name is Annie Carpinetti, and I represent the criminal division. And I just, of the Department of Law, and I'm not familiar with election law like my colleague is, but I would say that I have attended hearings in this legislative session which would change when a person who is convicted of a felony would be able to vote, and the bill would provide, and I think it's passed a couple of committees, it is not law, but the bill would provide that a person who is released from custody may register to vote, and that person need not have completed probation or parole or the other provisions. So just for your information, I thought I'd add that.
Okay, Senator Elton, then Dyson, then Thomas.
Just an observation, Mr. Chair, that I spent yesterday evening and this morning thinking about the issue. I mean, there is a fundamental difference between a legislator and a lobbyist, and that's the way we're hired. And one of the So one of the threshold issues for those constituents who vote for legislators, for example, is that they get to pick who represents them. I would suspect that a felony conviction in the past would be part of the discussion in a campaign. It's not necessarily part of any discussion when an entity is hiring a lobbyist. And so while yesterday I talked about whether or not we should be treating a legislator differently than a lobbyist, I mean, there is a fundamental difference in the way we're hired, and so I'm comfortable with the approach that is taken in this amendment.
Thank you, Senator Elton. Senator Tyson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if we could get copies of Mr. Jones's research here on how you get to be get to be discharged from and get your voting rights back and distribute to the committee.
Yep. Thank you, Senator Dyson. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one last thing on that, I guess. When you mentioned constitutional, are we talking about state or federal constitution regarding these particular rights?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, again, I'm just working on my own guesses, but I believe that would be in the state constitution if there is a constitutional provision for the qualifications for legislators.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments, questions? I'll go ahead and remove my objection, amendment number 5. Any further objections to amendment number 5?
Just brief at ease for.
Brief at ease.
I'll object again, just to ask a specific question. I'm confused. In a previous conversation between you and I thought you were going to add something to that allows a person to become a lobbyist if they've got their voting rights back. Am I missing something here?
Yep. Thank you, Senator Dyson. There was a discussion that we had here a little bit ago, and I was contemplating that as the ebb and flow of the amendment goes. But in the final decision, I personally feel that the amendment as written is superior to a modification, and in particularly subjecting the issue to a potential legislative change in another other statute. So I feel that this is the appropriate amendment, and in the future, if the legislature would like to revisit it, that would be fine.
And I'm sympathetic to that perspective. I'd like to ask our attorneys here if indeed that's liable to be challenged in light of somebody having paid their penalty and gotten all their rights back and being precluded from this line of employment. Are we liable, or could we be exposed to a court challenge on this?
Ms. Carpinetti.
We would, any law or you would, a person can file a lawsuit challenging anything that you adopt. I think the more important question is, would it probably be upheld? I wouldn't be surprised if a lawsuit were filed challenging it. I'm not sure exactly what issues, probably maybe ex post facto or other issues. It's hard to predict exactly what would happen, but I think it would be defensible by the department.
I remove my objection. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Dyson. Any further objection to amendment number 5? Seeing no further objection to amendment number 5, amendment number 5 is adopted. Do we have any other amendments to HB 109? Senator Huggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would invite your attention to page 40. It has to do with lobbying activity. And I brought this to a couple of members' attention that were on previous committees, and I was surprised and disappointed to see there's a huge loophole that remains in lobbying activity. In this case, we went to great lengths, but I will propose my amendment at this point in time. Go to line 9. Where it says period of 1 year after, and insert before after, before or after, so that in this case if you want to hold these positions, you're precluded from 1 year after having been a lobbyist to hold one of these positions, for the same reason that you shouldn't be able to come back and lobby for 1 year. Conceptual amendment.
Okay. We have a, we'll just count that as amendment number six, I guess.
Number seven.
We have amendment number seven on the table. Amendment number seven on page 40, line 9, after the word 1 year, it would read before or. That would be the insertion, then
right.
After having.
Leaving.
Correct.
Right. Object.
Okay. Senator Dyson, you object, and you want to speak to the objection? And then
yeah.
Senator Elton.
So I'm suspecting that I, maybe all of us, are a little colored by the front pages of the press for the last 2 days, but I'm thinking about people I know who have been down here lobbying on behalf of abused children, and or other really issues that have no monetary consideration. And these are people of exemplary service. And you'll probably see on my lapel here, it's a heart with a grizzly print in it, and it was given to me by a woman in Western Alaska who works with abused children, wants us all to have the heart of a grizzly in terms of fighting for our children. I would not want to preclude someone like that for being able to run for office. And so I'm uneasy about this amendment, although I think it's well-intended.
Okay. Yeah, and thank
Senator,
you. And
Senator
I, see, I concur with Senator Dyson, but I would point out this on line 11, this subsection does not prohibit service as a volunteer lobbyist described in or a representational lobbyist as defined under. So it makes an allowance for that.
Senator Dyson, do you want to respond, then we'll go to Senator Elton.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think that there are some people here who have been lobbying and are a classic lobbyist that I'm still uneasy about precluding them for running.
We'll take a brief Eddie's. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I stand corrected and withdraw my initial amendment and would go back for a conceptual amendment. And let me just point out very quickly, if you look at the positions we're talking about, governor, lieutenant governor, head or deputy of principal department or executive branch, director of division, so it's a number of commissions or commissioners or and people that are subordinate to them, who are very influential. So in this case, for the elected, it would be before election or before employment for those that are not elected positions. 1 year before, you could not be a lobbyist. Conceptual amendment.
Okay, we have a conceptual amendment, and I'll go ahead and object for discussion. Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think where the maker of the amendment is trying to get to. In a previous amendment, I had pointed out there's a fundamental difference, you know, between an elected official. I mean, because your job interview is a very public kind of a process. I would just note that where the senator is trying to get to would preclude from running for public office. For governor or lieutenant governor would preclude people who have been involved in the governmental process as a lobbyist, for example, and would keep those people from even filing. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that. I don't want to keep people from discussing it in a campaign, but this wouldn't even allow that person to get to that point, and that makes me somewhat uncomfortable. I also think that the reason I was supportive of this section is that I think there is an issue, a legitimate public issue, on whether or not somebody was angling to get a job potentially as a lobbyist while they were a public officer. And clearly that's what this section was meant to preclude. I'm not sure that the reverse or the flip side is true, that a person who is a lobbyist is angling to get a public job. I understand the issue. I'm a little bit uncomfortable with the solution here. It's one of those things where my mother said, if you tug on the shorts at one end of the clothesline, the whole clothesline jumps. And I don't know that we want the whole clothesline to be jumping in this instance, even though I appreciate where the senator is trying to get to.
Thank you, Senator Elton. Senator Thomas.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that as well. Are we doing anything that runs afoul of the Constitution here as far as a person's right to their guaranteed right to be able to run for office with certain qualifications? Are we adding a qualification that we don't have the right to do, I guess, without a constitutional adjustment?
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, and well, with that, I will propose an amendment to the amendment which will exempt the two elected positions, which is the governor and lieutenant governor.
Could you please repeat that? I was distracted.
Yes, a conceptual amendment that would exempt the governor and the lieutenant governor from this provision, but those that are hired by the governor or lieutenant governor would be subjected to it.
We have a conceptual amendment to the amendment. And I'll object for discussion. Anybody want to speak to the issue? Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I'll identify with myself with the remarks from the senator from Juneau. It's hard to conceive of anybody moving from being the lobbyist to an official in the state because the money is a whole lot less. Aside from the overwhelming prestige and honor of it, it's hard to imagine somebody moving that direction. But I think of Joel Gilbertson, who now works for Providence Hospital, who is extraordinarily knowledgeable about a whole lot of, you know, public health issues and the financing of it. And what if this governor wanted to offer him a chance to serve in the health department here, or health and human services? You know, he would be precluded because he lobbies for Providence now. And I just think that limiting ourselves so much of the pool of experienced people, and lobbyists maybe have a bad name around here this week, but indeed most of them are inordinately honorable people with a wealth of knowledge, and to preclude the administration from being able to take advantage of that seems to me the problem we're trying to cure here. We're in danger of causing more damage.
Senator Huggins, and we'll try to keep to the amendment of the amendment. Senator Huggins.
Okay, thank you very much. I would just say I admire Joel Gilbertson. He's a wonderful person. If we go to those people that we know and admire, we would never pass legislation in a number of respects, because you either have a broad policy that keeps people that worked at Providence as a lobbyist to come here, and then we have to sort through the accusations of their paying favoritism to that organization in some shape, fashion, form, or another, or we have a shield that prevents that from happening. And it doesn't come to question. And it's just, it's very simple, before and after, what you're allowed to be able to do. I think it's a safeguard that's worth putting into place.
I think I'm going to remove my objection to the amendment of the amendment so we can keep some resemblance of order here. Any other objection to the amendment on the amendment which would exclude the governor and lieutenant governor? Seeing none, we're back to the main motion or the main amendment. Senator Elton.
Thanks. A difficult issue. I could make an argument on either side, but I'm going to make an argument against the amendment. I understand the discussion, and I think it's an important point, that a person who is a lobbyist that comes into state government, whether it's as a division director or a commissioner or other high policy position, can come in with a bias toward the employer. I would just note that that bias or that kind of a bias is also possible if the person comes in, and I'm going to use as an example a local issue, and I sometimes hesitate to name names of real entities, but I'm going to do it in this case because I'm comfortable with the entity and I know that the standards that the entity has. But REACH provides public services to needy people here in Juneau, people with special needs. If the director of REACH is hired by state government in a policymaking position, they have that same kind of potential conflict that a person who lobbied for REACH might have. And I think that, and I'm making this argument because I think that an administrator who makes a hiring decision, or if the governor is making the hiring decision, I would hope that that is part of the thought process that goes into selecting somebody and perhaps part of the discussion during the interview process. I'm not sure we can just, I'm not sure that the issue just pertains to somebody who's hired as a lobbyist. I think it can also pertain to somebody who's hired by the entity itself who does no lobbying. And because of that, I'm just uncomfortable with segregating out one kind of employee versus another kind of employee.
Thank you, Senator Elton. Senator Huggins on the main
motion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very brief. This is a rather thick bill, has a lot of provisions, that people did things in this building, in this state. There are a lot of great Alaskans out there, and this essentially addresses a potential cloud. We're fixing things that probably don't need to be fixed in this bill. I'm voting for them, and I want to safeguard Alaskans and restore the confidence in this state and people that work at the state level, period.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. I'll go ahead and remove my objection to the conceptual amendment. Any further objections to the Senator Elton objects? Would you like to speak to the objection?
No, thanks. We've had a good discussion.
Call the roll, please.
Senator Dyson?
No.
Senator Elkin?
No.
Senator Huggins?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Thomas?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Stedman?
Yes. The amendment?
5-2-9.
The amendment prevails. Well, we're now on, I think we're done. Any other amendments? Seeing no further amendments, we're on to the main bill. One thing we haven't touched on is the fiscal note. And is there somebody, excuse me?
Nothing.
Is there somebody from the department that would like to speak from the administration to the fiscal note? Jump right up with enthusiasm and come on up. You could please identify yourself for the record and who you represent, and then give us a brief description of the fiscal impacts we're faced here.
Thank you. My name is Tammy Kempton. I'm with the Alaska Public Offices Commission. We have submitted a fiscal note. It pertains to one of the amendments that came out of the last committee. The amendment requires that APOC accept handwritten or printed campaign disclosure reports, and within 2 days of receiving those reports, have them scanned in and out on the web. We do not at this time have high-speed scanners. We'll need at least two, one for the Juneau office, one for the Anchorage office. In addition, in Anchorage, where the majority of the reports get filed, they'll need another staff person to do this work. And and you'll notice under personal services that the amount varies. It's 60 and then 80 and then 60 and then 80. The reason for that is during an election year, a state election year, will also need another half-time person. And then the third amount, the contractual, that is for chargebacks to ETS so that we can buy the bandwidth to get this material out there on the internet. That amount is subject to variation because at this point we have no way of knowing how many people will be submitting paper ones instead of electronic ones.
Okay, thank you. Okay, with that, we're going to go to the sign-up sheet. Mr. Bullock. Mr. Bullock, if you can go ahead and identify yourself and who you represent and speak to the bill or whatever section of the bill that you want to address.
Good morning. My name is Jeff Bullock. I'm a lobbyist, father of five, foster dad to three, and a felon. And the amendment you just adopted puts me out of work. I don't agree with it. Back in 1998, I made some bad business choices. I was convicted. I went to a camp. I served my time. I came back, sat out a year, started lobbying again, built my client base back up. And now that amendment effectively takes away my livelihood. I don't understand it. I think it's collateral damage. I could see if you had a something where the felony was committed in the act of a lobbyist or the act of a legislator, I would certainly understand that. But to far sweeping saying felons are bad, we're not. I was at a camp with 515 inmates. I wouldn't mind if any of those 515 inmates were my neighbors. We all make mistakes. We all reach for the first stone to throw, and you guys threw it. And it hit me and my family, and it hurts. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Bullock. With that, we'll go to Tammy Kempton. You're done? Okay, thank you. I have trouble reading this name. Lewis J. Something.
He's gone, Mr. Chair.
He's gone? Is there anybody else that would like to come forward and speak on the bill? Oh, I almost read that last name, but not quite. Do we have any call-ins? Do we have any comments from the Senator Elton?
Just a very brief comment, and it's to the fiscal note. I appreciate where we're going with this bill. If you ask 60 people, there's probably 60 different versions of what is perfect. But I just do feel compelled to talk to the fiscal note for just a moment. I mean, the fiscal note that we have before us is purely administrative. I mean, it provides for costs that are going to accrue to compile reports. It doesn't address something that I think is very important, and that is the investigatory function of APOC. I think that one of the things that has bothered me in the past is we have an agency that we've created to be a watchdog for Alaskans, and the budget accommodates the collating and the acceptance of reports, but this fiscal note has nothing at all to do with boosting up the investigatory side of the agency. That bothers me, and that's the sum of my comments. I appreciate the work that went into this bill, appreciate the efforts of everybody that's behind it, and I look forward to its adoption.
Thank you, Senator Elton. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I am moved by the testimony we just heard, and it makes me wish that we had allowed for felons who had served their time and got their rights restored. That's all.
Any further comments on the bill? May we have a motion, Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we pass out of the Senate Finance Committee Senate CS for House Bill 109, with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes as amended.
We have a motion on the table to move the bill as amended with attached fiscal notes. Any objection? Seeing no objection, we'll go ahead and move the bill from committee. And we'll go on to our next item on the agenda, which is House Bill 133, electric monitoring, electronic monitoring of gangs, probationers. The intent here is to move the bill today. Members will recall that we heard in past Senate Bill 89, Senator Wolakowski's bill dealing with the same issue. I would like to have the bill sponsor come forward. Mr. Brook. And walk through the differences, or actually not the differences, but walk through the bill. And if you could introduce yourself and who you represent.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Finance Committee, thank you very much for the opportunity today. I would also like you to commend you on...
Introduce yourself, please.
Name. I'm Bob Book. I'm from Senate District 27, South Anchorage.
Thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity to speak in front of this committee today. I would like to start off by saying how much I appreciate your efforts in this very historic documentation I just witnessed passage. And I would also like to state for the record that this, too, is a very important bill. This may be the difference between life and death for some of those people living in Anchorage. House Bill 133 is very similar to SB 89, a bill that you already heard and passed out of committee. It would require people who are convicted of violent gang-related crimes to wear electronic monitoring devices when they are released on probation or parole. I won't go into the merits of the bill because you've already considered them thoroughly. Let me address instead the differences between 133 and SB 89. HB 133 is more narrowly focused than SB 89. SB 89 applies to offenders convicted of both misdemeanors and felonies. HB 133 applies only to offenders of convicted felonies. Because of this difference, HB 133 has a substantially lower fiscal note. SB 89 allows offenders to replace prison time with electronic monitoring. HB 133 does not allow offenders to replace prison time with electronic monitoring. HB 133 has a sunset provision. SB 89 has no sunset provision. HB 133 gives the Department of Corrections the receipt authority to collect funds from the offender to pay for the cost of electronic monitoring. HB 133 is the version that is supported by the Department of Corrections, Department of Law, folks in Anchorage and Kenai too, which is why their police departments have supported this legislation as well. The fiscal note for HB 133 is the same, basically, as SB 89 with one difference. It's less expensive. You will recall the Department of Corrections gave you three scenarios for electronic monitoring. HB 133 is the least expensive of those scenarios. I do have people here to speak to those differences, and in particular, if you have any questions, I am here for at your disposal.
We have any initial questions? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Book, you indicated, or maybe I was reading and not paying close enough attention, something that it allows a person to replace jail time with electronic monitoring time.
In Senate Bill 89, there is a provision to allow that. In HB 133, which is the one that was requested by the Municipality of Anchorage and the Anchorage Police Department, it does not allow for that provision.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Anybody? Senator Olson.
Is there anybody that's opposing this legislation?
I'm sure a lot of those gang guys are opposing it, Senator. This is a very serious piece of legislation. It does come with a fiscal note. We're going to be seeing that. I'm seeing from the Department of Corrections in 2 or 3 years. And It has been very, very tightly constructed to provide for the accommodations that are requested by the police departments. So we're very substantially supported by the communities of Fairbanks, Kenai, and also Anchorage.
So I want to commend you for bringing it forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Any other questions? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned Fairbanks, Kenai, and Anchorage. Are there other areas of the state that there are problems with crimes?
Crimes of this nature? Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, their concern is that they take care of the ones that are expressly exhibited in Anchorage so they don't spread to their communities. So they are in support of this issue. They want to nip this in the bud as early as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions? Anybody would want to come forward and speak on this bill? We have nobody on the off net. Seeing no further questions, Senator Hoffman, we have a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that Senate Finance Committee pass out CS for House Bill 135 with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
133. We have a motion to move the bill, accompanying fiscal notes and individual recommendations. Do we have objection? Seeing no objection, we'll go ahead and move the bill from committee. Thank you, Mr. Brook, for your time today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the endeavors of this committee.
Didn't get a chance to welcome you to Senate Finance. I think this is your first time here, isn't it?
Absolutely, it is, and it is a great honor to be here, my privilege, and I'm very humbled by this experience.
We'll go on now to House Bill 229, Kenai Gasification Project Railroad Bonds. The intent here is to move the bill today unless there's some issues at that surface. With us to present the bill is Laney Snyder from Representative Chenault's office. And if she could go ahead and walk through the bill, it'll be the first time some of the members have heard this bill. A couple of us have heard it before, so if you could please walk through the bill and explain to us what is going on, and then pay particular attention, I think, to an amendment, a rather large amendment that was added to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, Lelania Snyder, staff to Representative Chenault. The purpose of this bill is to authorize the Alaska Railroad Corporation to issue